hold up. Did I say Millie's my nickname and Mark is my real name? I'm trying to start using Mark more. Most people think Millie is my real name, but I'm an art dealer. I own and operate a gallery in downtown Baltimore called The Gallery About Nothing, located at 805 East Baltimore Street.
Why are you trying to go by Mark more than your nickname? Is that a personal reason or just professional?
I guess it's just like rebranding. I don't know, like just trying to grow up more. I'm trying to change. Like I've been, so I started out, I was rapping, and Millie was like my rap name and my nickname since middle school. So I'm trying to go a different route.
And how long has it been since you decided to go start going by your government name?
Oh, this has only been a few months. I say at the end of 2018, I was like, let me switch it up, rebrand.
Have people been receptive to it, or are they like, where's Millie?
Both. Because most people think Millie's my real name. So they's like, what?
Okay, I got you. So yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. Yeah, right. West Side.
And what was growing up there like? How old are you? Or when did you come up?
It was regular shit. I was young in the city, and then I moved to the county, like, beginning of high school.
Yeah, I got you.
Not a two-parent household, really, but stepfather, stepmother, so kinda, but...
So it was both of your, like, did your parents get divorced and then both of them got remarried?
My father didn't get remarried. My mother did. But my mother separated around, I was young, probably like 10.
And were y'all out in the county when that happened or still in the city?
Still in the city.
Okay. And where were you living at over west?
Over west, I grew up off of North Avenue in Ruxton, Liberty Heights, et cetera, like. I mean, as far as the city, and then after that, it was Milford Mill.
And what was growing up in those two areas like? Did you get any type of culture shock moving from over west to Milford?
Not too much, because I spent time in the county and the city regularly, back and forth. But I would say just like, all right, there's a bunch of deers in the backyard now and grass and bigger houses. But other than that, it wasn't too crazy.
And then you moved to the county.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you went to Milford Mill High, or was it Milford Mill Academy?
Milford Mill Academy.
Okay, and what was that like?
It was regular. I'm glad I wasn't popular then. I'm a little bit more popular now because of what I've done. In society, there's lower, middle, and upper class. I was like middle class in high school as far as popularity. It was cool. I was cool with everybody, both sides.
So okay, and
both sides.
High school is a time where people usually get exposed to things that's going to stick with them throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, given the space that we're in and, you know, what the gallery represents, hip-hop is one of those things. I got really first exposed to it when I was in high school, and it was really kind of a roundabout way. Like, I was listening to, you know, Biggie, Nas, the same old stuff that everybody was listening to.
Right.
But it wasn't really until my friend Seth, he gave me a copy of The Listening by Little Brother, and he was like, just listen to this. I liked it, but I was more like into MF Doom back then.
Okay.
And it's like I didn't really appreciate what Little Brother was doing or that album until I got older. Like, right. I'll be 30 this year.
Okay.
And now when I listen to The Listening, I'm like, damn, they were really on to something. So for you, having a gallery dedicated to the art that is hip hop, when were you exposed to it?
I would say it was early on. 8, 9, my father like was listening like NWA, Bone Thugs and Harmony. So like that was my early stuff. And then once I wasn't around him as much, I was big on No Limit. Like Master P was my idol. Like I wanted to be in No Limit. So
you trying to make him say
Yes, all that. No Limit, Cash Money, Jay-Z, Rockefeller. Like I started rapping at 12 and I stopped around 25. But when I started rapping at 12, I wanted to be like Jay-Z, Master P, et cetera. Like, it was mogul, it was rapping, it was all of that. So.
How did your parents feel when you told them that you wanted to be a rapper? Did they support you? Were they like, what is this stuff?
My father did a lot. I would get in trouble in school for, like, writing raps in class, so my teachers would show her that. And it wasn't what a 12, 13-year-old should be rapping in, you know, in around that time. So she wasn't feeling it.
Once your parents were separated, did you ever feel like listening to rap was a way to stay close to your dad, or did you get to see him often?
I saw him often enough, but yeah, I felt like because he put me on the Bone Thugs and Harmony, and that was like, that's like one of my favorite groups of all time. So it was him that put me on to them.
What hip hop artists are you into now?
Still the same. I listen to some of the new stuff, but it's not like I'm not like into it. It's cool, but I'm still like 90s. 90s all the way. I listen to a little bit of everything. It's not just hip hop. I'm all over the place, but still, I'll go back and listen to Bone Thugs and Harmony, Raekwon's Only Built for Cuban Links, all the classic albums, and a lot of the stuff that I couldn't listen to when I was younger, or I couldn't find, because now we got streaming, so we can find a lot of stuff on YouTube. So I go back and try to find as many albums as I can that I didn't hear when I was younger, or I didn't know about, because a lot of stuff that came out that I haven't heard it.
What's some music that somebody who's known you for a long time might not know that you're into, and they'd be surprised if they see you singing the words?
Taylor Swift, Green Day, like all that shit. Oh. Blink 182. Like, when I was in middle school, like I'm listening to those. It was stations that would play everything, so I'm listening to a lot of that stuff. Okay. And I don't know a lot of the artists by names. I just know the songs that were popular, but them, Panic of a Disco, all that stuff.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit more about your rapping. You said you started at age 12, you stopped at 25.
Well, 25, 26.
Yeah. 25, 26. What was that journey like? Because that's over 10 years. That's more time than a lot of people will put in really anything. Mm-hmm. So what was that entire process like?
When I was middle school, I started out in a group. It was three of us. Then once I moved from where I was living at and started going to high school elsewhere, then we kind of split up. I started doing a solo thing. Within those 10 years, I've done more than what most, I would say, Baltimore artists have done in that time frame. Went to New York and met with record labels. Like, and I feel like if I would have got signed back then, I would be like one of those, not even a one-hit wonder, like, it wouldn't have went well, like, because I didn't know nothing about business. I was just...
They would have just signed you.
Yeah, and I would have been on the show.
And just dropped whatever. You.
Yeah, but, I've done shows in New York and different places. Like, I did a little bit. You could probably find about 15 mixtapes still online. And people hear that stuff now, and they're like, why did you stop rapping? Rap again. But I didn't. I fell out of love with actually performing music. And when I stopped rapping, I started managing.
What was that day like? Do you remember it, the day that you just woke up, or that moment where you just like, my heart's not in this anymore?
I don't remember the exact day. My second time getting locked up, I didn't spend no real time. I was spent like a day in jail. But I was like, while going through the process of like court and all that, I'm like, all right, if I get through this, I'm going to keep rapping. And so I got through it, kept rapping, but then I'm like, this isn't really what, because I like the way Drake makes music, so it's like I wanted to make music like that, but I felt like my life wasn't interesting enough to like have a story. Like, I'm just lying and making up shit, you know what I mean? So I was like, I'm gonna go behind the scenes, because I always loved the business and helping other people. So I'm like, let me do that full time.
And then was your decision to go behind the scenes and start managing more, was that informed because when you did meet with those labels and stuff, you just like, yo, there's a whole bunch of shit that I don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt like, I still feel this way. Artists don't know what about the business. They're just going through this, just making music, not knowing which way to go. And now I'm over that too, like, because artists don't listen. So, recording artists, rappers and singers don't know anything about the music business, so it's annoying when they don't listen. So,
and how long were you manager for?
Like 3 years.
And was it just Baltimore artists, or
for the most part, mostly Baltimore artists? Yeah, maybe okay. Like some others from different parts of Maryland, but I don't think anybody from out of town. I mean, not like when I was rapping. Yeah, we had like artists on our team from out of town, but yeah, as a manager, no.
What do you think the issue is with the Baltimore music scene, and why we can't break out? Is it just because we're between Philly and DC and they're bigger cities, or like, what's our problem?
We want to be like everybody else. I feel like for the most part, like most of us want to, we got the group of people who want to be like the other rappers, Atlanta, mostly Atlanta. A lot of people want to copy the trap sound. Then you got the people who don't listen, they don't study the music business, none of that. And then you just got the people who maybe don't even want to be big. They just do it for fun. The biggest thing is not listening. Like, some people put their homeboy on as their manager, and he doesn't know nothing about the business. So, like, what's the point? Like, what are you doing? And you got people who need help, seek help, but then don't listen to the help. Who know, like, people who know what they're talking about. Like, me, for example, like, people just want to do what they see everybody else doing. I mean, like,
but they don't see that you got to work up to that point. Yeah. You got to kind of get that respect or put in that work, and then eventually you'll be able to make, you can make those across the board decisions, because like you said, those artists, you know, either through experience or by studying things or having a mentor or honestly somebody like a manager to tell them, like, I've been around these corners, so you don't want to go around them. Until that point, you can't really, you always got to listen to the professional. And I think sometimes for a lot of artists, they just think like, well, my art is the product, so therefore everybody just, you know, listen to me. But then somebody on your end would be like, well, it's kind of the reason why you are in the position that you're in, because you think that you know best.
Yeah. And it's, and another big thing is like money and relationships. Like, it costs a lot of money to get in the game and get moving. Like, people don't even think, like, they want their song on the radio, but they just think the radio is supposed to hand it to them. Like, they're obligated to play your music that nobody knows. It's like, nah, it costs a lot of money. Let's just say $25,000 to push your, to do the radio process. Just
$25,000?
Something like that. It's up there. It's within that realm. It might be, yeah, it's about to, yeah. From the interviews that I watch, like, that's, and stuff that I've learned, like, it's big money, marketing, promotions. Like, you need at least $500,000 behind you to get to where you want to go. Like, most artists do not understand that. Like, they just rapping, and it's a business. If you're not bringing in any money or spending any money, then you're wasting time.
So what do you think about stuff like SoundCloud, Spotify? Do you think that streaming has made it easier for an artist to get popular, or now it's just another thing that they need to master?
It's another option, where, but now you got more people doing it. So now you got a bunch of people on this one platform, just like, all right, your stuff is on Spotify, but who's listening to it? Just because it's on there don't mean that people still got to find you. Just because it's on Spotify doesn't mean that you're on. Like, I had music on Spotify in 2012, like, people are just getting on, and I still have two songs on there. Don't go listen to them, but they're there. but yeah, this, and that was in 2012. I feel like SoundCloud and Spotify is just another, it's just another oversaturated thing, because now anybody can put their stuff on there. It's just oversaturated trash. It's just a lot of too much going on. It's too many rappers.
Too many rappers, not enough managers.
Yeah.
So you stop doing the whole music thing, you said when you were around 25, 26?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what motivated you to open up an art gallery? Because before we started, you said that you were up the street, like, mm-hmm. further east or
yeah,
west?
Yeah, it was the next block.
So, oh, okay.
Like, literally, like, this 805. I was at 823. I had just got that space for just office space. I was managing artists at the time, visual and recording artists. And we just got it because we were like, all right, we want to make the next Def Jam, and we want it to be in Baltimore. So that was the idea. That was going to be our office. It's a 3-story building. We only had one room up on the second and third floor. And then the visual artist who I was managing, he had his art on the wall, and I'm like, oh, this could be an art gallery. 2 months later, that's what I did.
I'm going to ask you a similar question to when you decided to stop rapping and then just leave the whole music industry totally. What moment did you feel, or did you decide, I'm going to start a gallery now?
October of 2015. Well, when I started the gallery, I wasn't done with music, like, altogether. Like, it was still going to be, like, both. And I even had, like, business partners who didn't feel the same way. Like, oh, no, we're supposed to just be doing music. Like, I didn't sign up for this art gallery thing. A couple of them left and was like, I'm not feeling it. But then ended up trying to come back into the fold later on. But, yeah, it was, once I had the idea for the art gallery, it wasn't, like, fuck music. It was, like, put the two together, because you've never really seen that. Like, visual art, music. Boom. So that was the concept, to have, like, because we had a recording studio in there, all of that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I also want to talk about the name. The current gallery is called The Gallery About Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then before it was called...
The first name was The Incredible Little Art Gallery.
The Incredible Little... I said, okay, I didn't even know that. Yeah, I thought it was another
name. The
Incredible
Little Art Gallery was the first name for, like, 6 months. Then the second name was Give and Take.
Give and take
an artistic experience, and then the Sand Gallery.
Give and take mm-hmm. artistic experience?
Yeah, give and take an artistic experience. That was, like, short-lived. It was, like, a couple months out of there. So the name changes come from the Incredible Little Art Gallery. All right, it's 5 business partners. 1 business partner left. we all on one LLC. I'm changing the name. He's gone. New name. Another business partner or two left. Change the name. Same thing. So same gallery and then gallery about nothing. So after each business partner was gone, just because I don't want ties and, oh, I own that name or I came up with this, just like, let me, you know, change it up.
And then San, sorry, what were you going to say? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just like rebranding and stuff. I like starting new. Yeah.
Gotcha. So then San, that stood for or stands for currently Sell Art Not Drugs. Mm-hmm. What's the story behind that?
The guy who came up with that, his name is B. He still comes, we see him like every what? Once in a blue moon. But he's still cool. He came up with the Sell Art Not Drugs, and I was like, well, I don't want the gallery to be called Sell Art Not Drugs. So I'm like, let me, what does this break down to? Sand. So, all right, the Sand Gallery. His idea as far as Sell Art Not Drugs, I'm like, that is marketable. It's going to look good on shirts, blah, blah, blah. So, like, I still push that brand, but by him not being physical and being able to be here all the time because he's a new father, got a girlfriend, all of that. So it's just like, all right, let's change the name, but still, we can still promote your stuff, but we're not going to call the gallery that if you're not going to be here physically and all of that, because just to cut out confusion.
Yeah, of course.
I don't steal nothing. I'm just, you know what I mean? I just like to keep it a clean slate. And
just keep it moving from there.
Yeah.
So before I ask the next question, I want to talk a little bit more about just business in general.
Mm-hmm.
You said that y'all were all under one LLC when you first opened up
the gallery.
So what's that process like? If you could give like a brief 2-minute summary of starting a business, how does that work?
Well, I think as far as getting at this point in my life, I don't even feel like, depending on what you're doing, I don't feel like going the total like legal LLC route is necessary starting out, depending on what you're doing. But the process, we went on LegalZoom. It's so easy to do certain stuff now, but we went on LegalZoom, did it, wait for the paperwork and stuff to come, and boom, it's there for you. That was that process as far as getting an LLC.
So you didn't have to pay any fees?
Yeah,
the fee,
we all split it up. It might have been like $500 or something in total when we... My whole thing with having multiple business partners was, all right, it's going to be cheaper to pay for stuff. But then you got to think about, all right, well, if you can't just think about it from a money standpoint, because everybody might not be putting in the same work. Like, yeah, they're putting up money, but what else are they doing besides that? So I think that's where a lot of the problems came from, in my opinion. But I just wanted stuff to be cheap. Like, all right, if I got 5 business partners, the rent's going to be cheaper. You know what I mean? This and that is going to be cheaper. So that's what that was. But, yeah, the total for the LLC on LegalZoom, I think it was like 500 something. We split it up and it was 4 of us on there, 4 or 5 of us on there.
In what instance should somebody not go the legal route for their business?
Like, starting out.
And I don't mean like illegal shit, but like.
Yeah, like I would say if you're not bringing in a lot of money with whatever you're doing, then don't go, because then you got to pay taxes and stuff eventually. So if you're not bringing in any money, but you're going to have to pay, you're going to have to pay for certain expenses, then. Like, as far as getting all that legal stuff done, and you're not bringing in any money, then just wait till you're ready, save up some money, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to say, like, all right, if you're what business, you shouldn't do it. But I would, more so creative businesses. Like, if you're an artist or whatever, and we know, like, people don't pay visual artists or whatever, like, can you draw me for free, blah, blah, blah. Like, visual artists aren't making a big amount of money to where, all right, let me make all of this legal. It's just, like, I feel like a lot of people do that just to say that they're official, like, to put LLC behind their name. Oh, I'm popping. I got my LLC, blah, blah, blah. But are you bringing in any money? Like, you paid all this money and you're not making any money. And now you got to pay the government for whatever, or you might get a space and you got to pay this rent. You did all that just to say you did it. But
now you got
to
return your business cards.
Yeah, like, don't just do it just to say you did it. Like,
right. I mean, so let's talk more about the gallery, about nothing as it stands now. I can see everything around here. You took me up the floors. But for all of our listeners, give us a little audio tour of what it looks like.
Yeah. So when you come in, so like as you're coming up, when you first enter the door, like as you're coming up the steps, if you look to your left or your right, you're going to see a fake timeline of how all this started. Like the first poster is the Incredible Little Art Gallery. Then next you're going to see a poster of Give and Take, saying it's like a little timeline of showing all the names that was there before. When you get to the top of the steps, then you'll start seeing a lot of artwork from different artists. The first piece, main piece that you'll probably see is Tyra at the top of the steps. But then you come in, there's the main room where we greet people. And then there's the big room where we do most of our sipping paints. There's like 200 plus pieces on the wall. 80 different artists, give or take. So the first floor is specifically the Gallery About Nothing. The second floor is the Mini Hip Hop Museum. In my lifetime, Mini Hip Hop Museum, where all the hip hop stuff is. When you come up to the second floor, I wanted to make it feel like somebody's bedroom who grew up in the 90s or the early 2000s. So the wall is covered with magazine pages, covers, posters, etc. And then that's the first Mini Hip Hop Museum room. Then the second one, there's cassette tapes, vinyl, record players, boom boxes. And you can come and actually play this stuff. Because okay. a lot of people haven't. We get a lot of younger kids who come. They never seen a cassette tape. They never played CD. So you can come and do that.
Let's talk a little bit more about the events that y'all have at the Gallery About Nothing. Like you mentioned, you have Sippin' Paints, and I was watching on the IGTV. Don't y'all have an event later on tonight, or did they already have?
That was last night, probably though, with the model, the Triple X and Paint.
Yeah,
that was last night. So Triple X and Paint is done by our creative director, Kid. Pretty much, you're coming. It's an adult experience. You know, your regular Sippin' Paint. You come and paint and blah, blah, blah. But then there's a twist where we got a nude model, female, could be 1, 2, 3, depending on the night. You could paint on her. You can paint on your canvas, you know.
Okay.
You might even do a little bit extra, you know.
Does it cost extra?
It costs extra for this particular Sippin' Paint.
Okay.
Because we got to pay the model, too.
Right.
Know? Our typical Sippin' Paints are probably like $20, $25. And then like for the, when we got models, could be 25, could be 30, 35. Maybe we'll get up to 40 eventually. But, you
know. Okay. I want to go back for a second to the first floor with the different pieces from different artists. Mm-hmm. When people come through, is the art for sale? Can they buy a piece?
Yeah, all the art on the wall is for sale. And so we accept layaway and payment plans. So if somebody might already be paying on something, but 9 times out of 10, all the art on the wall is for sale. You can buy it outright. You can do a payment plan. You can do layaway, whatever. Layaway and payment plans like the same thing, right? So we got options. Because a lot of people haven't bought art, don't know how to buy art. Why is it so expensive? All of that. So, you know, if something costs $900 and you really want it, then you could pay it off. But most people don't understand, like, why is that so expensive? It's because these visual artists spend, literally, they could spend months working on one piece. Kid, for example, was working on one from July to July, but that's because he sketched it out and then stopped and then got back to it. But it can take months. It can take months to do it.
Moving back to the events, you got the Sippin' Paint, Triple X and Paint. I know that Maryland laws have changed in the past few years, and you know, if I'm making it too hot, let me know. How do y'all pull off these puffin paints?
We're located above the cop shop. So, like, the cop shop is on the first floor of the building that we're in, and that's where all the cops go to get their stuff, whatever, whatever. I feel like with the laws changing and it being, you can smoke recreationally or whatever, so we're not selling weed. You're coming to smoke just in our space. So the puffin paints are popular. I think they pretty much started in like DC at first, the first time I seen them. You're coming to smoke. You can smoke whatever. You can smoke cigars, hookah. It's just a safe space where you can come and chill and do your thing. Yeah, we're not selling anything illegal, whatever. Sometimes we got edibles.
And they don't ever bother you from downstairs?
We've been here for 6 months and smoke lingers and whatever, whatever. So, I mean, no. And we're right across the street from the police headquarters, so.
Okay.
I feel like, but they're not locking people up for smoking. And they're selling weed legally. It's a dispensary in Fells Point, like 5 minutes away, so.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Who do you look to for inspiration when you're coming up with new events or new exhibits? Or is it just how you're feeling? Or do you have an overall vision for the gallery?
Sometimes it's random. Sometimes I'm getting inspiration from maybe something happened in the news, maybe a popular artist or somebody died, and we'll do an exhibit based around that, like just dedicating that to them, or 90s R&B, or I might get inspiration from the artists that work out of here. So it's different. It's different things. We might get inspired by a Facebook post or something we saw on Instagram. Could be anything. A lot of stuff is music related for the most part, and art too. But yeah, we're all over the place. It's very random.
Okay. We were talking about it before we started this podcast interview. you and some of your associates, y'all are working on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
We started Throw the Whole Podcast Away in May of 2019. It's me and Rel are the host of it. I started doing podcasting like 2015. So the podcast that we're currently working on stems from a podcast that we had back then called, the podcast was Fuck Your Feelings. It's cool to cuss on here, right?
Like I've been cussing.
But.
It's fine.
I just wanted to.
Two questions before we finish. Yeah, it's all good.
But so the podcast that we're working on, me and Rel are the Boy Thoughts, but that stems from the Church of Boy Thoughts. It was six of us back then. Now it's just me and him.
The Church of Boy Thoughts?
The Church of Boy Thoughts. That was the name. And that was the name of the collective of us that hosted that podcast. The podcast was called Fuck Your Feelings. We did about six episodes maybe, then that came to a halt. Then I just started executive producing different podcasts. So then we started this one, and it's called Throw the Whole Podcast Away. We are 9 episodes in right now, and it's just random stuff. Sex, relationships, music.
All the shit you talking about any other day of the week.
Yeah, exactly.
And do y'all record weekly?
Yeah, we record weekly. Randomly.
Weekly and randomly.
Different guests. I like Howard Stern a lot, so I want the Boy Thought thing to be like a universe, and we're going to have different characters, maybe start getting into TV shows, movies, all that stuff eventually. But yeah, it'll be much bigger than a podcast, because we do an audio, but then we put out visuals on Instagram and stuff.
They can follow people if they want to listen or learn more. What do they follow?
Follow Throw These Niggas Away on Instagram. And then look for the podcast on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, Throw the Whole Podcast Away. And it's lit. Check it out.
All right. Hopefully people check it out. Yeah. So we're going to start wrapping up here. You talked about what you want to do with the podcast and how you want to expand that universe. What's next for the gallery?
I really want to move the gallery down south, maybe in 2020. It's been cool in Baltimore, but like a lot of the people who come through to our events or buy art aren't even from Baltimore. Like they travel from PG, DC, Virginia, whatever. But or it's people who just moved to Baltimore. Like it's rare that it's like somebody that's from here, unless they're like returning or whatever. But like a lot of people don't know that we're here, or they don't care that we're here, whatever. Like, Baltimore's like a real... I feel like Baltimore isn't as open-minded as other places. I want to take it somewhere else. Like, it hasn't been as receptive. Like, people know that we're here, and they see the videos, like, oh, I got to come check y'all out, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like Baltimore is just like a real club, lounge, in the house, you know, or go to what's popular city. Like, if Artscape comes in the summer, all right, I'm going to go to that, check it out, maybe, but... Other than that, I feel like something like this just has to blow up somewhere else for them to appreciate it. With most things, like music, it's just been.
You got to leave your hometown and get big out there, and then everybody back home will be like, yeah, I remember when.
Yeah, and I've been doing that. Like, we popped up at J. Cole's festival. We popped up at Pharrell's festival. Then when they see that, they're like, oh, y'all doing big things, and it's a bunch of shares and all that stuff, but people still don't come out. People are just real, like, social media, stay in the house or do what they used to, support online or whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right, got you. So final question I have for you, how can people who want to learn more about the gallery, who want to get in touch with Millie, a.k.a. Mark, how do they connect with you? How do they connect with the gallery?
At The Gallery About Nothing on Instagram, The Gallery About Nothing on Facebook. We also, like, I run, like, 8 social media pages, so you can also, like, check out the Sell Art Not Drugs page, sellart.notdrugs on Instagram. You can hit us up, call or text, 410-504-9249, you know, like, if you...
Is that your phone number?
That's the one that's on Google, so I have 2 phones, and I use them both personally and for business, but that's the one that's public and that can be found on Google. I feel like that's a direct way, like, if you need some info, want some flyers, because the algorithms on social media are crazy right now.
Okay. Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't already gone over?
No, we touched on everything, I think, but I'm not sure when you're dropping this, but, like, just come out to an event. We do stuff every weekend, unless we're out of town. Like, the first week of August, we're going to be in New York for the Art Trap House, but other than that, we have events every weekend.
Do y'all have a list of events on Eventbrite or anything like that?
Yep, on Eventbrite and
I just did a flyer with all of the events for August, so you can, like I said, text that number or DM us on Instagram, and we'll send you what you need.
Awesome. All right, well, Millie, Mr. Mark, however you're going by these days, thanks for sitting down with me. I appreciate you taking the time out, and thank you for inviting me to interview you in the gallery about nothing.
Yes, sir. Thank you.